Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, 19 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb global headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kunze, your that FedEx daughter. And then, of course, FOMC later the week. Wednesday will be the announcement. Reeza Hendricks, talking portfolio construction, but looking at multi-manager perspective rather than asset classes. And then Gavin Learn from Rich Ideas. How do we rate a financial advisor? I think that's an intriguing question. I think we probably think, well, are they making us money? Not important, but I think there's more to it than that. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Which parts of PSG should I keep? So it was, 10 days ago? If you held PSG, you got PSG Consult, Kiro, Stadio, Copagri, CA Sales. Which bits should you be keeping? The Economist Twitter's shareholders approve Elon Musk's $44 billion offer to buy. Of course, the next step is actually a court case in a couple of weeks' time in Delaware. Morning markets on Friday. US was red, S&P down 0.7, NASDAQ off 0.6. Asia, Sydney's down a couple of points, and Tokyo is closed for Old Age Day. Commodities mixed. Gold, 1,678. Brent, 91.94. Platinum, 896. And palladium, 2,116. They've held up fairly well over my holiday. Rand, 1,767. Bitcoin, 18,800. Top 40 opening call, red, 300 points down, and that is 0.5%. That as Tencent trades down 0.9% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Nick Kunze, portfolio manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. Friday, as I was coming back from holiday, all of my Twitter feed was around FedEx, which managed to do what people were saying, bear market in one day, down 20%. They were very, they were bearish. I mean, you know, the quote is, global volumes declined as macroeconomic trends significantly worsened. This has spooked the market because you've got to say logistics companies are a bit of a canary in the coal mine.
Yeah, morning, Simon. It's, you're going to need a holiday after this week that's coming up, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it really is a canary in the coal mine. I mean, it exactly does what it says it's going to do. It moves parcels around the world, and that effectively is if the world is turning or not. And they were very, very bearish, as you said. I mean, there was a big mix, a big miss. And more importantly, they decided to scrap their guidance, which I thought was, a telltale. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's so bad are things looking forward, according to them, they actually can't even guide. And that's part of written into law of American companies. You know, you have a call and you have to become a quarterly call and you guide. Well, they're not. So, the share's down 20%, I think, at the end of the day. But overall, not a great set of results. And certainly tying into, I guess, the slowdown theme that people are starting to talk about now. I mean, this would certainly second that.
And that then, I mean, slowdown feed. Now, take your point on guidance. I mean, if FedEx can't see into the future, what are we trying to do? Because we're not as close to the coalface. Then, of course, Jerome Powell and his team, their meeting starts tomorrow, rate announcement on Wednesday. In my sense, is 75 points is baked in, 100, I think unlikely, but maybe not off the table.
Yeah, not just the Fed. Obviously, the biggest economy in the world is obviously the most important, but we also have the likes of Bank of Japan, we have Bank of England, Switzerland, Brazil, including our own South African Reserve Bank as well. So plenty to sink your teeth into. But the Fed being the most important, as you said, they said tomorrow, we'll know Wednesday evening. 75% yes baked in. But, you know, there is an outside possibility you could get 100 basis points. I mean, such as the balancing act these guys have got. But, I mean, it was obviously spooked. Start to this whole sell-off was spooked when you're on holiday last week when, coming back after those terrible inflation prints.
Yeah.
And that is despite oil, dropping $30, $40 from its high, gasoline down, I think, something like 50 days in a row. And yet still inflation is sticky. So, yeah, real balancing at the Fed has got. Look, I think 75 is done. I'd be very surprised for 100 because there are certainly risks further out there, but the Fed still woefully behind the curve.
Yeah, woefully behind the curve. And a quick last one: we throw stage six into load shedding, stage six load shedding into it. A rand at 67, 68 this morning. It's going to be a rough week for the rand, I suspect, as well.
Yeah, and again, another balancing act that the Cyprus Reserve Bank have got, because if it wasn't for load shedding, they'd be comfortably raising 75 basis points. But I think what Eskom are doing, well, lack of Eskom are doing, is certainly causing a problem. You know, they might even hold back, because this is going to knock the GDP for South Africa quite significantly.
Yeah, and I take your point, and it's what Eskom's not doing. Eskom, make us power, can't do it. We leave it there. Nkunza, Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning.
If seagulls were Hadidars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Riza Hendricks. He is portfolio manager at PPS. Riza, good to chat again. We're talking this morning, a note you sent out. I mean, a lot of folks will understand the difference between different asset classes, your bonds, your commodities, etc., etc. You're saying actually there's also multi-manager. An example would be a growth perhaps versus a defensive manager, and including thought around that when putting together a portfolio.
Yes, absolutely. So, as you rightly mentioned, we're a multi-manager, Simon. So we specialize in going out and selecting promising managers as well as funds, and then combining those in a sensible, diversified way to achieve a certain objective. So we've got a very structured, very rigorous process that sort of underlies, that backs the process of manager selection. And it really all depends on the objective of the solution. So it depends on whether the solution is a single asset class one, or if it's a multi-asset class one, and then also what the objective is, if it's got a long-term objective or a shorter-term objective, if there is a higher risk tolerance that goes with it. So perhaps you're trying to achieve a CPI plus 3 or 4 mm-hmm. or 5 objective, or you're trying to outperform an index such as the All Share Index or a bond index or a peer benchmark. So it really does depend firstly on the objective of the solution and the risk tolerance that's associated with that in that time horizon. That then drives us, it sort of channels our attention into which types of managers one needs to be focusing your attention on.
I like that point. We actually start with the end in mind and sort of work backwards to it. And then I suppose, I mean, you've obviously got, as you say, and there's a team of you who would then look at different managers, not just for their style, I imagine also partly to their asset classes they're in, because you might mix asset classes here if that's needed, but also is it also performance, or is it more about that team and the style that they're managing?
So performance is a key element. It's not all about performance. Mm-hmm. We actually use a quantitative screen up front where we filter down the universe. You may or may not believe it, but there are over 1,000 unit trusts available to an investor locally in South Africa. And so we need to initially narrow that universe down, and we do that by using a simple performance screen, mm-hmm. just to focus our attention on managers that are actually able to achieve their own objectives and can in fact deliver some outperformance. But that's just the quantitative side of the process. There is also a qualitative side that looks at the actual business where the fund resides. It looks at the team, it looks at the approach, and that's where the style which you mentioned comes in. But we do also pay attention to performance, because at the end of the day, it is the outcome that investors are looking to achieve.
And you make a point in the note you sent out where you say, you know, you make your allocations, you sort of start with the end in mind, you make those allocations, and then you're very cautious about changing. You're not going to, you know, just chatting with my previous guest around, you know, interest rates and FedEx and all of those fears. You're not sort of waking up on Monday morning, running into the office and panicking and making a whole sell changes with it.
Correct. We invest for the long term. And so one really has to understand the style that the manager is employing. It could be that certain styles do underperform over certain time horizons. And and as long as one understands the performance signature that the manager tries to achieve, you can sit through periods of underperformance because one understands why that might be happening. It could be that a certain style, like value or growth, might be out of favor. And it could be that could be all that it is, or it could be something a bit more structural. It could be something underlying that is driving that underperformance, and that is really when we do go in and kick the tires and try to understand that. But certainly, you're right. We don't chop and change managers over short-term underperformance because we are in it for the long term.
Yeah, and I take that point. Different styles have their day in the sun, and it's about that sort of balanced portfolio. What about style drift? I mean, that must be one of the risks where you've got someone who's a value manager or defend, or whatever it might be. You've categorized them, and you start to figure over time that actually they're not quite doing what their mandate is. I mean, is that something which you worry about, or is it less common than perhaps we think?
It is something that we do look out for. It would be a red flag for us. I would say it isn't as common as what one might expect, especially given the type of managers that we do look at. It tends to be very reputable managers that have been doing what they're doing for a very long time. They have an edge in a certain style. Interestingly, though, we find that in South Africa, just given the small universe of stocks, etc., we find that very style-specific managers, we tend to not make very much use of those, just given the small universe of opportunities available locally. We find that one doesn't really want to constrain yourself too much, given that the market is already quite concentrated, already has quite a few select opportunities at any point in time.
Yeah, I take your point. And then I also like the idea that if you pick the right manager, you start with the end in mind and you get the right manager, then that style drift actually becomes less of an issue. They've got their reputation. They will manage it. We'll leave it there. Reeza Hendricks, a portfolio manager at PPS Investments. Appreciate the early morning.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
We're going to be chatting with Gavin Lewin in a moment from Rich Ideas Group. Just struggling to get him on the line. He put a tweet out, it was probably about 2 weeks ago or so, and he was asking the question of how do we rate our financial advisors? And I thought that was, I think the simple one is that we're going to say, well, how do you rate your financial advisor? Is, well, are they making me rich? I mean, that's probably it. Gavin, appreciate the time we've got you on the line. Your tweet around how to rate financial advisors, I mean, there's very important things like coffee and the quality of that, but truthfully there's a whole bunch more, and it's not going to be just around return, is it?
No, absolutely not, Simon. Yes, it is an early morning, so good to be here. No, it's not about coffee. In fact, it really depends on what your mandate was to the advisor. And I often find that there's sometimes a sort of expectation disconnect between what the advisor expects and what the client expects. But if your mandate to the advisor was, for example, just to fulfill on a product, then you would want to evaluate that advisor against the advisor's experience with that product and that product sector, whether that advisor is in fact qualified to provide advice within that product sector. And then also the legislative requirements around the product and the impact of that product on things like tax, etc. But that's absolutely the basic.
Yeah, I mean, so it comes back to, and it's almost like the previous conversation I was having, which is your first conversation you would have with a financial advisor is hugely important in that it sets the tone for that relationship. What are you hoping to get as an outcome?
Yes, so financial planning as a process is exactly that. It's about planning. And if there's a planning process in it, means that you're wanting to achieve a certain outcome. So if your outcome is to create wealth, for example, or if that's the expected outcome, then of course the financial advisor will have to, or planner will have to be able to deliver on that mandate. If one looks at one of the studies that were, in fact, a paper that was put out a few years ago by the guys at Vanguard, they looked at various components with regards to how does an advisor add value. And the components really centers around, did the advisor add value with regards to portfolio value, with regards to financial value, or, I mean, more importantly, I think anyway, the emotional value. Because look, financial planning is a holistic process and you cannot just look at our financial outcomes. I mean, there's so many aspects to it. So when you engage with an advisor initially, those are the things that you need to be able to articulate and get agreement on.
And that perhaps is almost the more important one, and a large part of your job, which is that emotional part, sort of talking me down when I look at my portfolio and it's looking terrible because the world markets are collapsing. I imagine you spend a lot of time saying to folks, hang on a second, remember your goals, remember your timeline, you've this sort of thing happens. You're kind of almost a guidance counselor.
Oh, very much so. So yes, you've got to look at the behavioral coaching side of the business more than anything else, because as humans, we're sort of irrational and we make irrational decisions. And that's where an advisor can add a lot of value, in the sense that you can identify blind spots and you can calm the client down with regards to making rash decisions, which could have a major effect down the line in terms of the outcome of that portfolio.
And that then almost flips the question on the head. We're talking here about how to evaluate. It almost becomes more a case of how to choose that. It's about finding that right advisor up front in the first place and having, I suppose, recommendations, having conversations and finding that fit. Because again, if this works well, this is a multi-decade relationship.
Ideally, it should be financial planning. I always say financial planning and the outcome should be as boring as possible. So it's a long term commitment in terms of that relationship. So yes, you've got to find the right fit right up front. But remember, I said it depends on what the outcome is and what the mandate is. If it is to create wealth over time, then you've got to put those agreements in place up front. And do not be scared to evaluate more than one advisor. I mean, do the interviews, get the recommendations, get the referrals. And find the right fit. That's so important.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be that right fit. That is, I think, really at the crux of it. And if you, again, you start well, you're probably going to end well as well. Leave it there, Gavin Loon. Here's Rich Ideas Group. And that's our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter. How do you rate your financial advisor? What do you think of their ability? And it's not just around necessarily making money every single day. It's that long-term relationship. And oftentimes it is just sort of that emotional support. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We've got no poll vote from last week because, of course, I haven't been around for a week. But have your vote on our new poll, LinkedIn and Twitter, around financial advisors. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We've got Gary Boyson.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the Money. Also available on podcast.